Hello, hello. Welcome to What to Read Wednesdays, your go-to podcast for staff picks from your friends at Delaware County District Library. Here, we'll talk about books, podcasts, and other relevant media. I'm your host, Annie Pasma. Hello, everyone. I hope you all had a fun and safe Halloween. I know I did, because I had to work that day. As a history fan, I have always loved Halloween because that was the day in 1517 when Martin Luther nailed the 95 theses to the doors of Wittenberg. Because that will get into like a religious discussion, I won't go much further than this. However, it was a monumental point in history, and you should definitely go look it up. Or watch the movie Luther with Ralph Fiennes. It's a really, really great movie. All right, moving right along, we have our regular guest, Mark, telling us about his recommendation that is a literary fiction in a Shirley Jackson sort of way.
Hello, my name is Mark Stevens, and I work circulation at the Powell Branch. The book I'd like to recommend to you today is entitled The Summer That Melted Everything, and it is by Tiffany McDonald. I would suggest this book for young adult readers and definitely adult readers. This book of literary fiction, which I read a few months ago, is one of my favorite books. It is so multifaceted and unique that I hardly know how to describe it to you. But I truly am excited to explain this book well because I want many, many people to read it. Perhaps it is best that I start in general terms. You will be confronted in this book, which is set in the summer of 1984, with many social problems such as global warming, fear and prejudice, AIDS, and even mass hysteria of the townspeople. Yes, this book is unsettling, but don't assume it's preachy. These problems hover just in the background, only to create an eerie, suspenseful, troubled mood. This book's theme could be the questioning of what is good and what is evil, and the dangers of holding beliefs too strongly, and the potential strength of rumors. This book could be termed an Appalachian Gothic novel because the book is set in the small southern Ohio town of Breathitt. Okay, just as an aside, it reads like it should be pronounced breathed, but no, it's Breathitt. I know that's odd, but so is the town. Okay, on the surface, it's a typical small town, generally middle class to lower middle class, and is filled with hardworking people who seem to know everyone else's business. Everyone has a nice veneer, but almost in a Stephen King-like fashion, has a dark side filled with secrets. All the characters in this strange book are flawed. And by the way, this book has great character development. I've enjoyed stories by Flannery O'Connor and definitely Shirley Jackson because they have a magical realism where everything seems a little haunted, a little off. And if you've read some of those authors' works and enjoy them, I imagine you will love this book too because so much in this book seems not quite right. Yet, in some ways, I think most readers wouldn't mind living in this town, especially if you could be friends with the main family, namely the Bliss family. Interesting name, isn't it? It's a name that does fit in the beginning until the problems occur. Honestly, this family reminded me so much of that fantastic Joyce Carol Oates book, We Were the Mulvaneys. Many of you probably read that book since it was an Oprah Book Club selection. That book, and in this book, readers fall in love with what seems to be such a happy, almost perfect family who has it all until life happens and their world collapses. The Bliss family consists of four members. The father, who has the strange name of Autopsy Bliss, is a highly ethical prosecutor in the veins of Atticus Finch from To Kill a Mockingbird. Then there is the mother whose warm, loving personality is hampered by her being housebound with severe agoraphobia. The older brother, Grand, I know, another strange name, Grand, the stereotypical high school baseball star who is loved by the entire town. And then 13-year-old Fielding, a decent, questioning, intelligent small-town boy who could be taken straight out of an old, classic 1940s movie. Fielding is the narrator of the entire story, and you will follow him into old age. The family is thrust immediately into the book's main problem when the father, trying to make a point to his neighbors about a trial's outcome that disappointed him, writes a letter to the editor to the local newspaper, inviting the devil to Breathed so he can explain to autopsy why bad things happen in the world. Well, the book really takes off when the next day, Fielding, while walking on the dusky outskirts of town, encounters a tattered, mysterious, homeless boy named Sal, who claims to be the devil, answering what he calls the ad in the newspaper. Fielding brings the boy to his home, and his parents allow him to remain until the authorities solve the problem, which they never do. They, along with the rest of the town, push Sal for answers, but not too hard. So Sal, who never deviates from his claim to be the devil, is humored and allowed to remain, even to the place where he becomes accepted by many. Indeed, Fielding and he go on adventures that may remind you of Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer. Sal ironically projects decency, wisdom, and goodness, and seems the opposite of demonic. Yet, a figurative darkness does descend on the town, mostly caused by a never-ending severe heat wave that seems to crush the town and the people's spirits. Ironically, it begins with Sal's arrival, and as the town people's nerves begin to fray and tensions arise over conflict, Sal increasingly becomes the town's target to tragic consequences. I'm working hard here to avoid any spoilers, but I do want to say there are several very impactful characters I haven't described, and problems will arise with them that will break your heart. Each of the Bliss family also has major storylines that are set in motion by Sal's living with them. This is definitely a heavy book, so it is not for everyone. For me, though, it was just perfect. You fellow book lovers know what it's like when you read a book that just clicks in so many ways that you know it will go on your list of really good books. Well, this treasure is definitely on my list. It is 320 pages and is available on both Hoopla and Libby.
If you're into family sagas and mysteries, The Summer That Melted Everything is probably right up your alley. So I happened to see Reggie the other day, and she told me she didn't know she could write a review of nonfiction. But of course she can. In fact, I would love to have a coworker send me a review of a book they didn't particularly care for, fiction or nonfiction. Coworkers. Anyway, she will have that one to me soon, but in the meantime, she sent me a review of a series about Robin Hood. Robin Hood has been around for centuries, it seems, doing good deeds, fighting the rich folk. But what happened when he made peace with the king and the nobles? What happened when he retired? Author Carrie Vaughan has spun two wonderfully fancy tales about Robin, his wife Lady Marian, and three unique children who have only heard the stories of their famous father. Could the tales be true? How silly. But one never knows when trouble comes knocking who will step up to rescue the damsel in distress. Read The Ghosts of Sherwood and The Heirs of Locksley for two short, very enjoyable stories of Robin Hood's family and friends, and find out what really happened. Personally, I love Robin Hood. The very best version of Robin Hood in film is, of course, The Adventures of Robin Hood, starring Errol Flynn, Basil Rathbone, and Olivia de Havilland. Oh, I think, there is the Disney version that is really, really good. I love that version too. But the one that I'm talking about is from 1938, and it is freaking amazing. You will not regret it. The Adventures of Robin Hood with Errol Flynn. Watch it when you have a chance. It's so good. All right, next we're going to hear from my good friend, Bridget.
I don't like to read. Books are boring. I read a paragraph yesterday. Reading is a school thing. Do you hear any of these comments from children? Hi there, I'm Bridget from the main branch, and part of my job is finding books for children who are hesitant to read, don't find the joy of reading, and plain just don't care. They're out there, folks. Maybe you know one or two. Maybe you're struggling with one right now. Please, just read a little, you beg. But nope, they're not gonna budge. Maybe a child needs a little confidence boost. Maybe they just don't see the fun in it. Either way, what can we do to help? We get creative. We branch out of our normal views of reading and dig into the multitude of resources provided in today's world. Any type of reading is positive, and as professionals, parents, and caring caregivers, it's our job to tap into these resources and open a window of possibilities for our children. My first step? Talk to them. Find out what they like to read. If a child wants to read about gas, and I don't just mean hydrogen or oxygen, give it a whirl. But I find it really hard to read something I'm not interested in, and neither will a child. I regularly read joke books at the dinner table, and eventually I find one of my kids picking it up and trying to read it to me to make me laugh. Score. Hey, they're reading. Even if it's a book about smelly farts, they're reading. Second, read with them. If your child is 10 and having a lack of interest in reading, pick up a chapter book and read it with them before bed. Spending time with you may end up being one of their favorite things to do. A hint? Find out what they're watching on TV and see if any books from that show exist. It might not be what we'd like for them to read at first, but if it sparks an interest, it's done its job. Third, try something different. Podcasts for kids, becoming known as KidCasts, are becoming a popular resource, including topics about science, writing, news, and music. Some of my favorite are Kid News, that's with an N-U-Z, Book Club for Kids, Saturday Morning Cereal Bowl, Stoop Kid Stories, and Activist U. Listening to someone read isn't cheating. It's another form of learning and can be just the ticket your child needs to find their niche. Some activities or suggestions that I've used for reluctant readers are to read outside at night with a flashlight. Get creative and have fun. Get down with science. Reading instructions together and then putting together a cool experiment, what's more fun than that? Put together clues around the house for your child to read and find something fun they'd like at the end. Then have them make some clues for you. Let your child pick a book out for you to read, and I'm sure this one might be one of their favorite things to do. Also, pick up a graphic novel. Trust me, they're real books, and they're pretty awesome. And did you know the library still provides magazines for kids? It's true! And last but not least, if all of this has got you thinking, but how do I get them to read the educational stuff too? I like to pull the whole two faves, two learns. When we take a trip to the library, my kids get to pick two books they'd really love to read and two books that help them learn something new. Well, I could go on and on because that's what I tend to do, but I'll keep my excitement for helping kids find fun in reading at bay, at least for now. Please visit the library for more fun suggestions from our librarians. We thrive off helping children find their love for reading and helping to create lifelong readers.
Isn't Bridget the best? She's so good at her job as a youth services specialist and a mom. So if you're having trouble getting your child to read, come talk to Bridget. I mean, you can talk to any of us. I love helping children and parents with getting their kids to read, but Bridget has a very special gift. So come talk to her if you are having trouble getting your child to read. Okay, so we're on to the portion where I talk about what I am reading. I am reading about 4 books right now. Mama Bear Apologetics. It's a combination or a compilation of different writers. A Good Kind of Trouble, a book called Cynical Theories with a subtitle that is really long and I can't remember it right now. And I just finished reading A Pearl in the Sand. I'll try to get reviews of all those other titles when I get the chance. But A Pearl in the Sand is a biblical story of Rahab. I don't often read those kinds of books because I find them to be too cookie cutter and trite, but this one was really well written and I found it to be more complex than other biblical fiction. Right now I'm listening to Hannah Coulter by Wendell Berry. I have about 30 minutes left of this book. I was first introduced to Wendell Berry when I was in college and have not looked back. It has been a while, but I remember liking his essays. When I started reading Hannah Coulter, I remembered why Wendell Berry is such an amazing writer. He may, in fact, be one of my favorites. The man speaks to my soul. Now, saying something such as like he speaks to my soul may sound hyperbolic, but I assure you it is not. He is very truly an amazing writer, and I highly, highly recommend Hannah Coulter or any other Wendell Berry work. What I'm looking forward to, I haven't seen anything coming out recently that has me excited, except, of course, the conclusion of The Ember in the Ashes, which comes out next month. I think it's called A Sky Something. Sky's in the title. I don't have that in my notes, so I'm just kind of winging it, and I don't remember what it's called. All right, folks, that is it for today. Remember to send me an email at whattoread@delawarelibrary.org with suggestions, comments, or ideas. This is your host, Annie Pasma. Thanks for listening.